The most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Hour number three of Sports Talk begins with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. And once again, we jump to the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline, where we get to say hello to Brent Hubbs of BallQuest.com as he joins us for his weekly appearance. And that, of course, is brought to you by our good friends at Diversified Enclosures and Screen. From design to installation, the team at Diversified has you covered. View their portfolio online at sunandscreen.com. Brent Hubbs, how are you?
I'm okay. Hope you guys are doing well. Happy birthday, John.
I sure do appreciate that. Thank you very much. And thumbs up in regards to all other things. There is a lot that's swirling about. We see the Big Ten is saying conference games only for their football campaign. We've seen the ACC say that it's not going to have any sports in August, which impacts some on-the-field sports, does not yet impact football. Brent, what do these kind of headlines do to you as you just kind of take a look at what might be the landscape as it exists right now?
Well, I think it certainly brings in a lot of concern that we're not going to see football maybe this fall. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but I think a couple things that are working against college athletics beyond the numbers presented by the CDC and all of that stuff. I'm no medical expert, so I'm not getting into that. But the fact that you had an ACC school and a Big Ten school shut their voluntary workouts down this week in North Carolina and Ohio State is the first concern. We've obviously seen larger numbers at other schools like Clemson and LSU, but we're seeing now schools shut down with what appears to be smaller number of cases, and they're not just quarantining those athletes. They're shutting down the whole workout. Now, maybe that's because they feel like everybody's been exposed. I don't know, but they're shutting all that down. I think that's a concern. We all know that the college football model relies heavily on attendance and dollars from attendance and ticket sales. And the fact that it doesn't appear you're going to see more than 15,000 to 20,000 people in an NFL stadium this fall has to be a concern for college football because of the money they need to generate for their athletic departments, universities to fund things, including other sports. So I think those are the questions that create those events create greater concern about where the landscape of college football is, much more than the Ivy League's decision. Or even the Big Ten saying we're going to play a conference schedule only. I think everybody's got that on the table. I think that's certainly a possibility in all the Power Five schools if you can get to the field this fall. I think the bigger question right now is athlete safety in the fall and how much revenue are you going to lose in the fall? And is it better to try to play in the spring given those two things? Don't know the answer to that. I think the SEC and college football is going to kick the can down the road as long as they can before they make that decision.
Now, I will say that I think there is actually a bright spot and not a great shining beacon, but you take a look at Oklahoma, which last week it reported that as the Sooners reported to campus, they went through the first round of testing. They had 14 positives. They just completed, after the 4th of July weekend, another round of testing. They had zero positives. So, and when you also take a look, and I know that it's apples and oranges, but you see somebody like Jimmy Johnson who tests positive as his wife did, but in less than 2 weeks, he tests negative twice and now gets to get back in the 48 car and run for NASCAR. So while I do think that the number of cases is one that's going to generate headlines, I also think that perhaps an organization like the SEC might look for the more serious side of the illness, and if that's not prevalent or present or tears its way through a program, then you might see that it could become manageable as long as, again, things kind of stay within shouting distance, meaning that it would be asymptomatic people who do test positive but then show negative, different things like that. So I don't think it's all bad news, but certainly when you hear about programs stopping the voluntary workouts, as you mentioned, one in the ACC with Carolina, the other being Ohio State, those are reasons for concern, but we still have just a huge pile of unknowns, don't we?
Oh, no question. And, I mean, you know, to the Jimmy Johnson point, can colleges test kids, you know, three times in a week?
Great question.
Is that
great
even
point.
is that possibility even there at the college level and at all colleges? I don't know the answer to that. I mean, that's not a question I've thought to ask, nor do I know who to ask really to get that answer at this point in time. I think the more surprise to me at this point, and this has nothing to do with what's going to happen or might not happen in weeks ahead. I think the bigger surprise to me right now is we saw and heard that Jimmy Clemson had 28 positives, I think, or 38 positives, and LSU had a high number of positives. And they didn't shut down, okay? They quarantined those, and they continued on with whatever volunteer workouts they got going on. We're seeing schools with, you know, a half dozen, 10 positives, shutting everything down. That surprises me a little bit. Maybe that's because when Clemson and LSU were having those issues in June, there weren't, quote, hot spots, and it wasn't perceived as that big of a deal. Whereas now I think Louisiana Tech had three positives, and they shut down workouts. That surprises me a little bit at this point in time because I thought the plan would be to quarantine or was going to be to quarantine those positive and everybody else continues. Because if you're not sending all your athletes home when you shut it down, do we really think all the North Carolina players are distancing themselves and not seeing each other? Over, you know, while they're hanging out with basically nothing to do on campus, same at Ohio State. I mean, do we really think all those guys are just going to be isolated from each other for a couple of weeks? I think that's probably a little bit unrealistic given the, you know, given the mindset of 18 to 22-year-olds.
Hmm. Yeah, LSU put 30 in quarantine. Not all had tested positive, but they had, those that had been positive came in contact with others, and that number rose to 30 as far as those that they quarantined. Brent, we touched on this. So the ACC and the Pac-12 are expected to follow the Big Ten in terms of conference games only. The ACC indicating that they would assist Notre Dame with scheduling as many games as needed for Notre Dame. If these if four of the Power Five conferences say we're going conference games only, do you think the SEC follows suit?
Well, what's left? I mean, is it the SEC Big 12 challenge at that point for non-conference games? You know, I think, you know, everybody talks about dominoes falling. And I think this is the start of some dominoes. The question is, does the dominoes stop with conference games and we play a fall schedule, or do the dominoes keep falling? I think that it's very likely that you'll see other conferences follow suit, but I think everybody's, you know, still trying to hold out hope. I think the SEC will be the last to do anything like that, because I think the SEC is going to go to the very last hour before they make a decision that's not playing an entire full schedule, because I think that's just the mindset that they've had throughout all of this, is they're going to go as long as they can before they make any kind of final decision on the fall. But you know, if you play a conference schedule in the Big Ten, you've got the Big Ten Network, you get TV money. Yes, you're going to lose a lot of revenue and attendance, but that's going to be, you know, you can overcome that. You'll just take a deficit this year. In some ways, some schools can overcome that easier than others. My concern is, what are you going to do in the Southern Conference? You know, what are you going to do in Conference USA? Some of these other conferences, particularly like the Southern Conference, where ETSU is slated to get, I think, $500,000 for playing at Georgia. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that $500,000, that's not going into their coffers of reserve. That's going into their operating budget to balance, try to balance their budget, break even or whatever. Those are the schools that financially are going to really, really suffer if you're playing conference schedules only. And we're already seeing, we're going to see some of that in the Big Ten with some of their non-conference games, you know, not going to get played. That will hurt some of those smaller schools up that way. The Akrons of the world, Western Michigan, some of these schools that are playing those games just for a payday.
Now, we are told that the SEC has a plan for playing football in the spring. It might be one of 500 plans, but that is something I think they've looked at. How difficult do you think it would be to integrate football into the spring with all the other sports that you hope are being played also?
No, I think the bigger question is, I mean, look, it would be taxing on security. It would be taxing on parking with things and personnel. But I think the bigger question that college football has, well, a couple of questions. One, I think if you ask and polled coaches, they're against spring football because they don't want to play two full seasons in less than one calendar year because of the risk of injury and all of those types of things on players. I don't think any coach is in favor of that. So you got that going against you a little bit. Two, what's the NFL going to do? How willing are they to move stuff around for college football if you're playing in the spring? Are they going to move the draft to June when rookie camp's supposed to be underway? Are they going to do the draft in May? When are you going to do the combine? Okay, and with the, you know, how many of your star players in college football are going to look at this and go, hey, I'm going to play right up until draft day, basically? Or are they going to say, that's too much risk, there's too much money involved, I'm sitting out? How many players are not going to play in the spring because of that? So I think there's those questions involved there. But at the flip side of that, if you're an administrator on the financial end in college football and you say, hey, if we wait till spring, we think our chances are better of putting 98,000 fans in the stands as opposed to putting a third of that in the stands at best in the fall. You know what I'm saying? Lots of questions that way. I do think spring is the last resort. That's not the direction administrators want to go. That's not the direction conference commissioners want to go. Coaches are players at this point.
Our guest, Brent Hubbs of VolQuest.com. We'll get a break. We've got more with Brent coming up as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
99.1 The Sports Animal. Just because your workday is boring doesn't mean your radio station has to be.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson, our guest Brent Hubbs of VolQuest.com. Let's get to the phones where we say hello to Mike, who's been waiting patiently. Mike, how are you?
Good, how are y'all?
Doing well, thanks.
I was going to ask Brent and you guys as well, what does Vanderbilt actually bring to the SEC?
Academics. I say
besides
that, and it wasn't that long ago, Vanderbilt beat Tennessee, what, three times in football?
Yeah, three straight.
Three in a row?
Yeah, and before that, it was how many?
Oh, Vanderbilt got a win in 05, and then it was like 22 in a row for Tennessee. Vanderbilt's really good in baseball. They have had moments in basketball. They're not very good right now in basketball.
But in football, what brings the money when you go to, what do they call it over there, the Vanderbilt Stadium, what do they call it?
Vanderbilt Stadium.
And, okay, whatever. I mean, if any SEC team plays there, then there's more of the other team than there is of their team.
That's been true.
I will say this: they've been at their best in football. I mean, James Franklin took them to a different place in football. He's no longer there. I think they're sliding back down the other way. But he made them as relevant in the SEC in football as they had been in a long, long, long time. Now, again, we can go back to history forever. But there was a coach that the stadium's named after on the banks of the Tennessee River who was hired with the task of beating Vanderbilt. That was why he was hired. You better go beat Vanderbilt, because Vanderbilt back umpteen years ago was beating Tennessee consistently when they were, you know, one of the original teams in the SEC.
Well, you all said they couldn't even get into ACC, right? So they petitioned to go in the ACC, and the ACC said, no thanks.
I thought I heard Southern Conference, but I don't know how long ago that was.
Yeah.
So you don't think Vanderbilt should be in the SEC, I guess. Is that what I'm hearing?
I think they ought to be in the OVC.
OVC, okay.
Yeah. And they probably couldn't even compete in that.
Well, here's my bigger thing on Vanderbilt, Jimmy. And this is where, if I was Commissioner Sankey, all joking aside, okay, from you know, just random taking shots at Vanderbilt, which I don't have a problem with, but all aside from all of that, my question to them right now would be to the administration at Vanderbilt, if I was Greg Sankey, what is your commitment to athletics?
Mm-hmm.
What where are you? Your facilities are woeful, and you've not made upgrades in any football facilities. You don't seem to have a desire to do that there. Your attendance in the most important sport in this conference is bad, as the caller mentioned. And you've just let go of your sports information staff, so you're not going to brand and you're not going to promote your program like the rest of the SEC seems to be. So where is your commitment level? The old saying, what's the saying? It just means more.
Yeah.
Well, my question is, what does it mean to Vanderbilt right now? Because the feeling from their administration is that it doesn't mean nearly as much to Vanderbilt as it does to the rest of the SEC. And I think that's a fair question right now to be asked.
Very fair. But, Mike, we do appreciate the call. Let's go next to Jeremy. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Jeremy.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Doing well. How are you?
Pretty good. I got two recruiting questions. First, is Munden, do you think that's an Auburn and Tennessee battle right now since Georgia took that one linebacker?
I don't think Georgia's going to turn him away. Georgia may be nervous that they may not be able to get him. I don't think Georgia's going to stop recruiting him at all. I don't think he's told Georgia, you're out. There is a feeling from some people that it's more Tennessee and Auburn, and Georgia's on the outside looking in. But that's not coming from Munden, because Munden is playing it as close to the vest as any recruit you'll see in the country. I think there's a lot of people guessing on Munden right now, and I don't think anybody really knows, because Smile Munden and his small inner circle, which is basically his family, his immediate family, you know, parents, is not offering up much of anything to anybody.
Okay, and then my final question is, do you think we got a better shot landing either McGee or Ingram Dawkins? I'll hang up on the list. Thank you, Brent.
I appreciate it. I think there'll be a lot of pressure on Ingram Dawkins to stay in state from South Carolina. A lot of pressure there. He goes to Gaffney High School in South Carolina, which is not very far from Columbia. It's just outside of Spartanburg. I think there's going to be a lot of pressure there. If they play football and Tennessee has some success and South Carolina struggles, what's the job status of Will Muschamp? If those questions come about, that probably helps Tennessee a good bit in his recruitment. Just don't know what's going to happen there. I think Tennessee probably has a better shot at McGee than they do Ingram Dawkins at this point. McGee's a defensive back from down in Pensacola, Florida.
Jeremy, always good to hear from you. Let's go next to Steve. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Steve.
Hey, fellas.
Hey.
Hey. Brent, talk about, is there any remote possibility of Tennessee getting another or wanting another junior college player besides the running back he committed to us a while back? And also, I'd like you to talk about recruiting on the West Coast for Tennessee.
Well, I think recruiting on the West Coast is a little bit stymied right now because of the lack of travel.
Right.
And how when things open back up, how open are families going to be to sending their kid across the country? And, where's everybody's concerns regarding travel and everything else, if there's any, when all of this world kind of hopefully gets back to some sense of normalcy at some point?
Right.
I think to land West Coast players, I think two things have to happen. One, I think there's some exceptions, Henry T being one of them. But I think you need to be successful, and you need to have some success with West Coast players. And the good news for Tennessee right now is I think Henry T is going to be a star. And I think that's going to help them on the West Coast. I don't think it's an immediate landfall of players, but it gets you indoors over there. I think the question is, then is you have to find the family who's willing to and a prospect who's willing to travel three time zones away to play college football. You know, that's not always the easiest scenario for some people because, you know, their families can't come and see them as much as they would like, and kids can't go home as much as they would like on off weekends and different things like that. So it takes a little bit of a different mindset to travel that far to play. As for junior college players, you know, because you didn't have spring evaluations, you didn't get to go see junior college spring practices. So I think that slows down some of the junior college talk right now. I think if the junior colleges play football this fall and you got some evaluations, I think you'll hear more about junior college players around the country. I don't think you're hearing, not just at Tennessee, I don't think you're seeing a whole lot of junior college talk around the country at all right now. I think Tennessee in the junior college ranks would always be open to an impact pass rush guy. I think that you know, if they went JUCO this anybody else in this class, I think it would be a guy who they think could make an impact as a pass rusher.
Okay. Well, okay. Well, okay, fellas. Y'all, what is today?
Thursday the 9th?
Oh, happy birthday, by the way.
Ah, well, thank you very much, Steve. I appreciate that.
I noticed you hadn't given out an age yet.
39.
Oh, 22, Steve.
Well, I told you a while back, I remember seeing your picture in the media guide back when they still had that, and seeing your picture in there, and I thought you was trying to look like Mr. Cool just for the sake of the magazine. And you just told me, you said, well, I'm just trying to look good. So, you know, you just, there's nothing like psychology or anything like that. So I've decided a long time ago that you're just a regular guy.
So I try. That's what I shoot for.
I know.
Hey, Steve, thank you so much. You stay well and be safe, thanks. All right?
All right.
Hey, Jimmy, let me ask you this question on junior college players.
Yes.
What if a guy has a really good junior college year this fall and you're playing at the Power 5 and he's a midterm graduate and you're playing at the Power 5 level spring football? You're playing a spring schedule. A, would the NCAA let him enroll in January and be eligible immediately? And if so, would that guy not be the hottest commodity in recruiting down the stretch? That you can get him on campus and in 6-7 weeks he's on the field playing for you for a year?
Boy, is that opening up a can of worms.
Yeah, but that's a wonderful thought.
Yeah, now you're saying in junior college they don't have a season. Is that what you're saying in the fall?
No, I'm saying if he plays in the fall. He plays in the fall, graduates. He's got two to play, too. He's already used his redshirt year.
Yeah,
what are you
I'm going to say
if he enrolls.
I'm going to say no. I don't think you should play at a junior college and at a 4-year school in the same school year. So I'm going to say no.
So high school midterm guys, you would just advise all of them just don't graduate at midterm? Because they couldn't. You're saying if a junior college kid can't come in and play that season, high school kid wouldn't be able to come in and play either. Right.
He couldn't. For example, the high school kid couldn't play either.
Why not? Why?
Because he's played
not?
In the.
Is what I'm asking.
Because I don't think you should be able to play. Well, is a high school kid playing in the fall also?
I don't know. Depends on what state he's from. He might or might not be.
I'm going to say if you play in the fall in high school or junior college, you should not be able to play at a college in the spring. I don't think you should have two football seasons in one school year. That's my opinion.
I think you let them play.
Why?
Because this is a one-off. It's a one-time exception to the deal. Junior college kid doesn't have a redshirt year. I understand you can say, all right, you're not eligible to play, but we won't start your clock at that point. But, I mean, then that JUCO guy could go, I guess, straight to the league if he wanted to. I don't know how that would work. I just think it's such a bizarre year You know, if I'm Clemson and Trevor Lawrence opts out of playing and I've got the number one prep quarterback in high school and rolling on my campus in January, you know, I'm going to petition to get him on the field to play because he might be the best option I got at quarterback.
Well, you know they'll rubber stamp the quarterback. It's all the other positions that they have trouble figuring out.
I do think it's a potential. You were asking me earlier about the logistics and everything of managing. You know, that's a layer of something that who knows if anybody's even talked about it. What do you do with is that considered a gray shirt for them? Because is it really fair for a midterm guy to come in? And that shouldn't count as his red shirt year either, right? His clock just doesn't start.
No, he just does like he. Yeah, his clock doesn't start. He gets to go through spring. He can practice with you, even while you're playing games. I just don't think he should be allowed to play games.
Yeah,
practice all you want.
I mean, I don't know. It'd be an interesting decision. Be an interesting debate out there for sure.
Yeah, I wish we didn't have all these interesting decisions.
You and me both. Maybe the SEC will play a conference schedule in the fall, and we won't be having any conversations about spring football.
I hope so.
Yep, fingers crossed for sure. That's Brent Hubbs with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break and be back with more as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal. Sports Talk rolls on with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson, our guest Brent Hubbs of AllQuest.com. Brent joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. And, of course, Brent's weekly appearance is brought to you by our good friends at Diversified Enclosures and Screen. From design to installation, the team at Diversified has you covered. View their portfolio online at sunandscreen.com. We continue with the phone calls. It's Bert who's up next. Hello, Bert.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, I got a question for y'all. If all the Power Five conferences go to conference-only games, what do you think Notre Dame will do? Will they cancel their season?
No, they play five games against the ACC each year now, and the ACC has said that they will reach out and help Notre Dame play as many games as needed. So if the ACC is playing, I don't know, nine conference games, then they would probably work that out with Notre Dame.
So that could be a precursor to Notre Dame having to join the ACC for football.
I don't know if it's a precursor, but if you play Notre Dame, you're going to get a really good crowd, right? And you're going to get some TV money, some TV eyeballs out of that. So I think that they would bend over backward to help Notre Dame in this situation, even if Notre Dame is not committed to joining the conference in football.
Okay.
Just my opinion.
Yep. Okay, thanks.
Bert, we sure do appreciate it. Let's go next to Rusty. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Rusty.
How you doing this afternoon?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I got a question on basketball. It seems like the basketball team is really guard heavy and very little beef. Do you think there's going to be enough basketballs to go around for all of those guards?
What do you think, Brent?
Well, I mean, I think that's Rick Barnes has been doing this a long time. So I think that, you know, you just the best players play. And he'll play, you know, he'll play a rotation. I think the bigger concern with the beef is not about the number of basketballs you have, but if Pons is not back, do you have enough to hold up to be an elite team in college basketball? If Pons were to go pro on you, how do you replace that in the post? You know, from a defensive standpoint, shot blocking standpoint, you're going to play a lot more small ball, which probably gets you another guard on the floor, which would make somebody happy in the backcourt, I guess. But does that get you have enough beef to hold up against big teams? I would have that question about this team more than I would, you know, guys worried about minutes or guys worried about the number of basketballs being around.
Yeah, and they're really excited, one, about the way that John Fulkerson finished the season, Jimmy, and then also you add E.J. Anasicki, who I think he is listed as one of those that could be one of the bigger grad transfers to join an SEC school this offseason with what he potentially could bring to Rick Barnes' front court.
Yeah, I think he's can be a very valuable addition. They need some inside beat. They need some rebounding on the inside. And most people think that if you're an outstanding rebounder at whatever level, that transfers pretty well. The other thing is that, to me, Tennessee has the flexibility to go small ball. They could go Fulkerson and basically four guards if they wanted to. That is an option. And I wouldn't be surprised if there were times this year when Tennessee does that. But you do need the ability to have some big men inside against certain teams. Kentucky certainly comes to mind. But I do like the flexibility and the versatility that I think this team is going to have this season.
If Yves Pons is not back, and I'm not saying he won't be back. I think that depends on the draft and, you know, the craziness that's going to be that without a workouts and that kind of thing. I mean, I don't know what that draft's going to look like. But if for whatever reason he's not back, puts a lot more pressure on Plavich's development. And then, you know, him not having a summer, you know, to really work with the coaches to develop is probably a setback there. Because, this program has long benefited from what they've done in the summer the last few years with the development of their players. But his development, I think, will be key. To your point, Jimmy, you could take a guy like Josiah and drop him down and play him, you know, at the three or even the four, and create some mismatch possibilities that way, playing small ball. So you could get creative with your lineup there, for sure, because this is a guard heavy team. But I think Rick Barnes probably feels like it's a little more of a guard game right now than it's ever been.
Yeah, I'd also be surprised if Pons does not return. I think he'll be back. There may be some extenuating circumstances with the virus out there and so forth that might change that mind. But if basketball is played this season, I think Pons will be in a Tennessee uniform.
I just think it depends on if somebody falls in love with him in the draft. If he gets drafted, I'm not sure he comes back.
Well, the draft is pretty late, isn't it?
October.
Yeah. So I think he'll make his decision before that. Maybe not. We'll see.
Brent, we saw Corey Evans of Rivals put together a piece on who might be in the lead or where perhaps one of Tennessee's big-time targets, Paolo Banchero, could land. And while he doesn't have Tennessee first or second, those spots belong to Kentucky and Duke, he does have Tennessee at number three and once again highlights what we've seen Rick Barnes and his staff do, and that is build a fantastic relationship with targets that they talk to for a year, if not much more so, once they've identified somebody. Evans talked about how Banchero had a great visit to Knoxville, and so he says that he doesn't expect Tennessee to lead at this point in time, but he has Tennessee right there behind Kentucky. And and as Rob Lewis has talked about, Tennessee also is in this kind of mix for, once again, a handful of some of the nation's top prospects.
Well, I think for Tennessee, their best chance with Pablo probably centers a little bit more around what happens with Kennedy Chandler. If they get Kennedy Chandler, then I think their chances for Pablo probably increase because those two have a good relationship. If Chandler's not at Tennessee, I don't know that I would say Tennessee probably stays down the list behind, Duke and those schools you mentioned. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Kennedy Chandler here in the coming months. When's he going to make a decision? A lot of people around him think he may be getting close. I think Tennessee's positioned themselves pretty well with Kennedy Chandler, and he might actually help them with a guy like Pablo when it's all said and done.
Let's get a call from Chris. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Chris.
How you doing, fellas?
Doing well. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Back to the business of having football in the spring, and I thought, well, if football's going to be played, then you're probably going to be having basketball and baseball also. And I wondered how all that would mesh together, especially with March Madness and all the excitement that gathers around that. And I wonder if you'd comment on that, please.
I just think you make it work, John. I mean, at this point.
Yeah.
From a financial standpoint, it's pretty clear, no offense to March Madness, no offense to college baseball, no offense to women's basketball, from a financial standpoint, you don't need to go a full academic year and not play a football season. And I think any administrator, if you got them to be completely honest with you, they would tell you straight up, yeah, we got to find a way in an academic year to play a football season. And I think you just make it work from a TV standpoint. Everybody's got four or five different networks now, you know, channels within their network, and you make it work.
Okay, appreciate it. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure do appreciate it, Chris. Thank you. That would be, one, an embarrassment of riches with all of that going on at the same time, but it would also be a shame because, Brent, as you mentioned, there is a very specific pecking order as to what would almost immediately get lost in the shuffle.
Oh, there's no question. You know, what would be interesting then if I don't know that the baseball schedule is completely set at this point, probably not. I would wonder if SEC baseball series would become Sunday, Monday, Tuesday series to help you out your attendance, to help out your TV deal. You get it away from Saturday, you know? I don't know that. I'm spitballing and thinking out loud. Mm-hmm. You know, do you do that and not play, you know, a smaller school on a Tuesday? Maybe you cut back a little bit on your midweek games, or maybe you play midweek games, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or maybe you play a Friday night midweek game, but it's not against an SEC opponent, just to help your TV schedule out to get more games on TV for, you know, so you're not overlapping on the Saturday deal. I don't have any idea. Again, you got a lot of people, when you got a lot of checks involved and you got a lot of money going into bank accounts involved, people are going to find a way to make it work because they need the money. At some point in time, provided you're not putting kids at risk, at some point in time, it's going to come back to the money. It all roads lead back to the money. That's why everybody's running $100 million budgets in the Southeastern Conference, and it's mainly because of football.
That's Brent Hubbs with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break. A final segment to hour number three of Sports Talk is next as you listen to 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Here at The Sports Animal, we never really grew up. We just learn how to act in public, most of the time.
Final segment to this hour of Sports Talk. Final segment with Brent Hubbs of BallQuest.com as he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline. A question or comment to get under the wire, 656-9900, 656-9900.
Brent, tell us about a couple of defensive tackles, class of 2022, Walter Nolan, Curtis Neal.
We might have lost Brent. But tell you what, we are getting the pockets of heavy storm activity, mm-hmm. So I don't know if that impacted our communication with Brent Hubbs, but we will see if we can't regain said line.
Could be that he didn't like the question, or could be that he thought that the athlete should be able to play junior college in the fall and then in the spring play at Tennessee. Maybe that's what it was.
Or maybe he hit the mute button on his phone. Yeah. I will say this. Jarnell Stokes played a high school Christmas basketball tournament, and 2.5 weeks later played in an SEC basketball game. But that's a different topic. The hour's getting away from us. To answer your question, Jimmy, Walter Nolan may be the best player in the country at all positions in 2022. He is that. Mm. I think he's that good. He's really, really good. He is from Olive Branch, Mississippi, but has transferred to IMG Academy down in Florida, where he's expected to play this fall. And he'll be recruited hard by everybody. Tennessee's in it. I think LSU's a heavy player in that. I think Ohio State will be a heavy player in there as well. He does have a relationship with Tennessee. Jeremy Pruitt's been personally recruiting him, you know, contacting him. He mentions how much he talks to Tennessee, but he's going to be coveted by everybody. He can literally, I know we said this a lot, he can literally go anywhere in the country. I think he's that kind of good. Neal, as you asked me about, is a kid from over in Charlotte, North Carolina. I think it's going to be interesting to watch where he is in terms of what everybody's stock is with him. He got a lot of offers at the end of his freshman year. I don't know that he's grown a whole lot since then. He's not the tallest guy in the world. Does the lack of height kind of spook some people away because he got all those early offers and then sort of didn't grow anymore? And so I think there'll be some people who want to see him in camp because they have some concern about his actual size and his height, because he's not a traditional 6'4", 6'5", you know, defensive tackle that way. He's a shorter, squattier guy. So not sure if he's going to be as coveted as he was a couple of years ago when everybody really thought he was going to be, you know, a big, big deal because of how he played as a freshman and what size he was as a freshman. He just hasn't grown a whole lot more.
Your thoughts on Ashley Smith taking over the VFL program?
I think it's a good hire. I do. I think she – you know, the thing I like about Ashley, aside from her personality and, you know, just her – the makeup of who she is, her parents and just – you know, that family's different now, and I mean that in a very positive way. I think they're just really special people who want to help others and understand. They've been taught to help others, and that's something that their parents instilled in them. But the thing that I think where Ashley can be of a real assistance in, as a leader in that deal, she has so much experience in athletics in so many different ways. She's been involved in women's athletics. She's been involved in the NCAA. She's been involved in the operations side of football. She's been involved in the broadcast and media world for a little while. She's been involved in recruiting. So I think when you're talking about assisting guys in their careers outside of field of competition, as well as their careers beyond football, I think she brings a really unique perspective because she understands where the coaches are coming from. She sees the recruiting side of things. She understands the branding through the broadcast world she's been a part of. And she's got some NCAA interpretation in all of that as well. So I think she can be a great, great resource and will do a really good job running that program.
Brent, what's going on these days at VolQuest?
Well, we'll have the War Room tomorrow. We'll have our podcast tomorrow as well. A couple other recruiting things coming up tomorrow. Tennessee, I think we'll have a little Tennessee basketball coverage tomorrow afternoon regarding the current team, as some of that is, you know, the media has an opportunity there as well, and then we'll have plenty of recruiting coverage throughout the weekend. Also circling back around and catching up with some of Tennessee's committed players because we hadn't talked to a lot of those guys after their flurry of commits in mid to late spring. So kind of going back and catching up with some of those guys, seeing where they are as they patiently wait, some of them, to find out if they're going to play football in their state. Obviously, the state of Tennessee is waiting to see what the TSSAA is going to do. There's real concerns in North Carolina as to whether or not they will play at all. I think South Carolina has some similar concerns. Meanwhile, Arkansas and I think Ohio and Georgia and Alabama and some other states have said play on.
Yep.
So I think all these guys are trying to figure out what's coming up next. So we're going to go back and start catching up with some of those guys just to check in and see what they've been up to and see how things are in their life after committing to Tennessee back in the spring.
Hey, Brent, we always appreciate it. Thank you so much. Stay well, be safe, and we'll catch up with you next week.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right,
thanks, Brent.
That's Brent Hubbs of VolQuest.com as he joins us each week. And Brent's weekly appearance is brought to you by our good friends at Diversified Enclosures and Screen. From design to installation, the team at Diversified has you covered. View their portfolio online at sunandscreen.com. We'll get a break. Next hour, we look forward to catching up with Tennessee soccer coach Brian Penske. And up next, it's your chance to win. It's the Sports Fix at 6. Stay with us on 99.1, The Sports Animal.